Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 121. Before we dive into today's guest, today's episode is brought to you by Community Manager University. I am about to launch this new program, which is a training and development platform to support community managers from day one on the job through becoming a regional manager. The platform includes mini courses that cover the major buckets of the community manager role, including operations, marketing, finance, leadership, and of course, community management. The content is laid out in a graduated learning path so that the community manager can identify what content is relevant to them given their experience. They will also get resources, templates, Q&A calls each month, and a Slack group for peer networking. If you are interested in being part of the first launch, you can go to www.everythingcoworking.com/community managers. Today's guest is Alex Hughes, co-founder of Central Office. They have locations all around Portland, also in LA, Dallas, and soon to be Sacramento. And it was great to chat with Alex. I had so many questions for him. I had met him years ago at a conference and have stayed connected a little bit through the years, but wasn't super up to date on all the growth and expansion they've had recently. And I was able to visit their first location in Portland on a family trip to Portland I made a couple of years ago. And it's a gorgeous space. And you'll hear him talk about their design and sort of their ethos around what they're trying to create. It's a great story and will be super interesting for those of you who are designing your own space and thinking about potentially expanding to other markets. Alex also talks a little bit about their relationships with landlords and developing in a building that is in an opportunity zone in Sacramento and how that has or has not impacted their business. So I think a couple of extra interesting points in this conversation. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy my talk with Alex. All right. Today, I have Alex Hughes with me as my guest. He is co-founder of Central Office. And today, he's sitting in Portland, Oregon. And I should ask where in Portland, Oregon you're sitting. I've been to your first space, and now you have to give me the count. But Alex and his co-founder are now in four locations in Oregon, one in LA, one in Dallas, and moving into Sacramento. So Alex, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So yeah, we were just sort of pre-chatting and I said, Alex, I have so many questions because you've been so busy since the last time I saw you. I saw you at the conference a couple of weeks ago, but I had visited your space, I don't know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? I'm trying to remember.
I think so, yeah.
We had like the most glorious trip to Portland in May that year. We had no rain. It was gorgeous weather. We were like, we should move here. And everybody's like, you.
Well, now don't tell everyone that.
Yeah. Well,
it's always raining.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people said, you know, you get a budget for a good, like, you know, Mediterranean trip or Bahamas trip in February when things start to get dark and dreary.
Oh, it's a necessity. Absolutely.
Yeah, but we camped on Cannon Beach, I think, and it was amazing because we were in this yurt that was like $35 a night, like on the beach. It was, and it had heat. It was fantastic, really good memories. But anyway, so back to you and your space, which is beautiful. Can you just kind of walk us through your background, how you got into co-working and kind of where you're at today in terms of kind of locations? I have a lot of specific questions about your journey, but give us the high level.
Yeah. So the space you visited in Portland, that was our first location in the Pearl District. It's a old warehouse district that in the early 90s, it started being converted from rail yard and old crummy warehouses to the cool neighborhood everyone wanted to be. And I worked as a commercial real estate broker for about 15 years, primarily in the Pearl. And we helped developers acquire, build, and then lease out a lot of the multi-use buildings that are down there from the residential side to the ground floor retail. And then we started seeing a big demand for office once we had built up those two sectors. And I was actually working with my co-founder, Jeff, together on redeveloping the building that our location is in. and we were trying to lease it out on just to a traditional tenant, software company, construction company. You know, we had a lot of traditional tenants looking at the space, but it didn't really fit any of their programs. The market was a little soft for those types of tenants. And we found ourselves, you know, looking at each other like, how the heck are we going to lease this thing? And co-working was just starting to really emerge. So this was in like 2013, 2014. And we said, well, let's go out and get a co-working operator. You know, how hard can that be? And there weren't really any of that size and magnitude in Portland at the time. So we started looking into other markets and trying to recruit someone to come to Portland. And it was always too big, too small, too far, too something that wasn't right. And, you know, our most active discussions were with a well-known operator out of New York. And they ended up finding another, you know, building that was much larger, fit their programming a few blocks away. And the whole discussion really caught our attention that, you know, we, others liked the use. They liked that it could work in the building and in that neighborhood, which, you know, to that date had no co-working or really any kind of short-term flexible space other than trying to just find something that was a sublease somewhere if you were lucky. So it's very high barriers to entry. And we really didn't like a lot of the other operations that we were exposed to. And, you know, we had our own take on it. And so we said, well, how hard can this be? Why don't we just, no one will lease it from us. So why don't we just do it ourselves? And we.
How hard could it be? How much time could it take?
Well, we quickly learned, that it's not as easy as it seems. And, but the first location was a huge success. And, you know, we got these amazing groups in. We really tried to curate it and activate it with a good group of people, just like you would a retail development. And we thought that was missing and from the co-working space, at least in our neck of the woods. And we finished, you know, leased it up, finished it out. And we said, okay, that's great. Let's, you know, move on with life. And we got a great team that's going to run the space for us, and see you later. And then a few months later, we get a phone call. When are you guys going to do another location? I got another space. And we kept saying, no. And then we had some really good friends that were developing a building on the east side of Portland. And they wanted to do co-working and they wanted us to just help them figure it out. And through discussions, somehow they talked us into doing another central in their building.
There was wine involved, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So we opened that location about a year later after our first one. And then we said, well, I guess we're a co-working operator. We've got two locations. The next thing to do is to do a third one. So then we did a third one also in Portland, in the Portland area, out in Hood River. And a group in Los Angeles got a hold of us and similar thing. Said, hey, we've got a great building. We think co-working would be a good fit. You know, we said, no thanks, not for us. LA is a highly competitive market and large city, and pretty happy in Portland. And, you know, somehow started looking at the opportunity and it was too good to pass up, really. And went ahead and opened that one January of this year. And then similar thing in Dallas. We hadn't planned to go to Dallas, but a great opportunity presented itself to be not only a co-working operator within the building, but also be the amenity lounge and really physical operating system for a larger building. It's about a 300,000 square foot building. And that was our first major project that was more on a partnership structure and, you know, where we really see things going in this space in the future. So that's how we ended up in Dallas.
So in LA, the project there, were you working with someone who knew the market really well? I mean, the risk, you guys, born and raised in Portland, I assume. So, you know, and you'd been in the real estate space, sort of know every nook and cranny of the market. What did it feel like in terms of risk to move, you know, to an LA and to a Dallas where you don't really know the market?
Yeah, it's a good question. LA, there's a lot of good connections between LA and Portland. There's a lot of companies that do business back and forth between the two cities. A lot of transplants from California in general to Portland. And then being, you know, both myself and my partner, who's on the development side of things, we had a lot of real estate connections to LA.
Okay.
And so we were quickly able to understand the landscape, the neighborhoods, the opportunities, the operators that are there, where the gaps were. And then the building owner, who's our partner on that project, is Jamestown Development, who has excellent reputation for everything they've done. They specialize in historic renovations, retail developments. They have other co-working operators throughout their portfolio. And they were a great resource for, you know, understanding they weren't just a landlord trying to get rent and to sign a tenant. You know, they're really interested, obviously, in the long-term sustainability and success of that location. So we were able to really understand the market together.
So talk a little bit about, you mentioned LA, super competitive, Dallas also. You know, people, you know, like Nick Clark has recently said, you know, I think this market is really starting to get saturated. I mean, if you're operating there, I'm sure it feels stressful. Somebody's opening, you know, every week. Also, probably a lot of demand in those markets. The two kind of go hand in hand. But being highly competitive, how do you differentiate? What, you know, sort of who do you serve and who's your target member? And how do you differentiate in a market that's so competitive, like in LA or in Dallas?
So in LA specifically, you know, a lot of our members that are there have, they're very diligent. They shop all the competition. A lot of groups I've talked to there, you know, just ask what their story is and how they found us. And they've seen everything. They've looked at every operation, every nook and cranny, every neighborhood. A lot of them have moved from other operations. And, you know, their common theme is that the space, you know, feels highly professional, but it also feels like home. And in LA, we really swung for the fences with having an extremely nice space, but not over the top or extravagant, but just well built and very authentic feel to it. And it's resonated really well with all of our members and everyone that we've been exposed to in that market. And, you know, ever since our Pearl location, you know, we've really emphasized private offices. You know, it is co-working. You know, there's sometimes a misconception with that, that it's all open space. But really, the bulk of our offering is private offices and private meeting rooms. And then we have great collaborative areas that we also do open memberships, day passes. And that helps feed the exposure to a neighborhood or to a city, but it doesn't drive, you know, the entire revenue model. And those things all combined have really helped attract serious groups that want to do heads down work, but also want to be able to socialize, collaborate, meet other people that are in the area. And it's a balance trying to find the two. You see a lot of operations that are highly social, highly programmatic, lots of things going on, but then it becomes a lot of noise. And then you see a lot of spaces that are highly focused work, but then you get all these solid walls. You don't see any of your neighbors. Everyone's got their blinds down. And then you might as well just be in a teeny tiny little office all by yourself in a building somewhere and not talk to anyone. So it's a balance trying to find the two, and we find it pretty well and helps us be competitive amongst the many offerings out there. And then in Dallas, you know, Dallas is a fast growing market. There's a lot of co-working operations, but it's also very spread out. We're in a great submarket right on the edge of the central business district called the Arts District, right across the street from the Dallas Museum of Art. And then we're also a part of a larger building. And so we have become that shock absorber for people that are moving into the building, for people that are highly concerned about scale and growth and need to have some type of solution for, you know, we're going to grow to 100 people. We're going to grow to 150 people. Where do we go? We don't want to keep moving around town. We want to be able to have a good platform for scale. And being part of a larger building, a larger project, has really helped with providing that.
What does your relationship with a landlord look like there? How do you kind of access that overflow need?
So Dallas specifically, it's a joint venture. And we're both, you know, highly invested in the space and the costs to open and run the location. And then we have a revenue sharing model, and it helps just get us fully aligned with being able to solve the needs of not only our members, but their tenants. And we're on the same page to work together to best do that.
So you mentioned the amount of due diligence that members are doing today, which is probably a little bit different than in 2013, 2014, when you opened your first space, you know, not a lot of competition and newer consumer who didn't know how to shop. And now, you know, you mentioned you're getting members that are really well-educated. They know what they're looking for and they know when they find it. And I think super interesting to hear you talk about that balance. I feel like, would you say it's a little like part science, part art? I mean, finding that spot where you can balance that social need and the heads down need, and also design in a way that sort of meets an ROI without kind of going, you know, having to put so much into the space to make it compelling that the business model no longer works.
Yeah, that's a great question. I noticed that a lot in my old condo days when, you know, you first sold the condo at the beginning and it was like, oh, great, great view. Oh, I love the floors and let's move in. And then later on, after they'd lived in a few condos, they're like, well, what kind of floors are these? Are these engineered or are these real? Oh, what kind of countertops? Oh, what's the wall construction like? How thick are the walls? Who are my neighbors?
Yeah.
How many elevators to the building? Where's my parking spot? Like, they had this real world, you know, like you said, they're well educated and had lived in this type of product before. And they brought all their hot buttons to the next negotiation. We're starting to see that now with members that are shopping around for space. And they're asking, you know, they're highly attentive to the aesthetics of the space. They want to know what it's like of how they're going to present to their clients and to their guests that are going to be showing up. They want to make sure it's not branded, you know, overly branded, that it feels like their office and not my office. And then they want to know privacy and they want to know meeting rooms and how many people are, what's the availability of the meeting rooms. So there are definite levers where it costs money to just build a nicer space, more sound, you know, friendly space that's conducive to good work. And then there's a lot of things, thankfully, on the operations side and just the layout of the space that we've been doing to make it a better product. But we're highly attentive to not just spending money for the sake of hoping it is nicer, but to really provide great benefits and a great place to work for people.
Yeah, I think that balance can just be, I think a lot of people are still learning it. We talked about that on the design panel at the conference. You know, you've got the convenes and, you know, spending a lot per square foot and really, you know, going top shelf on their finishing and whatnot and kind of figuring out where to land there and still be competitive. So what is it like to run, you all of a sudden have teams in remote locations? How are your locations staffed and how are you managing your remote teams and keeping them all kind of running to the same beat?
Yeah, no, it's been a good learning experience. We're not perfect, but we're getting there. And, you know, it really boils down to having good people at each location that really own it. So we call them membership leads. They're responsible for sales and for making sure the location is in good working order. They have 1 to 2 community managers that help service all the members in the space and on a day-to-day basis. And then we have a team of people that reach across multiple locations, either within Portland, where we have multiple ones, or in the other cities. And they'll be, you know, on the operations side, on the finance side, and the accounting side. And then me and my partner. We also have a construction manager that really helps us keep track of all the details on the new projects so that we can stay pretty high level with those, not get caught in reviewing change orders and costs. And he really does a great job of making sure those continue to run smoothly while they're being built. You know, but overall, we're pretty lean and mean. We like to be close to the ground and understand everything that's going on. And we're able to do that by just having a great team of people around us.
How do you handle marketing? Is some of that done at the location level or is that all done centrally?
It's all done centrally. For the most part of it is done at the location level. And we've gone back and forth with how we've done that. We recently began outsourcing it as we're playing in multiple markets. Our ad spend is increasing. And so wanting to understand what's most effective with our advertising dollars. And then they'll also help us with branding, signage. You know, we wrap that all in outsource to one single group instead of having, you know, before we had it in-house, the strategy piece and the ad buying piece. And then we had multiple vendors helping us with creative and social and all the other working pieces. And this is great to shift it over to a group that we trust, you know, and like a lot and understands our brand and have it fall underneath their hood for all of the individual components.
And I'm curious, do you have a goal to create hubs in Dallas and LA, or could they continue to be one-off locations?
Yeah, we definitely want to replicate our success from Portland. And a big part of that is having a critical mass within a market. And, you know, earlier, I, you know, made it seem a little more casual that we just entered LA and Dallas. If those had been markets that would not sustain or would not have the opportunity for four or five locations, we wouldn't even have done a single location there. So our real growth strategy is be opportunistic, find a market that we can have a first location in, and then quickly be able to, you know, once we've got positive traction, quickly be able to add additional locations within that market.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's hard to have just one. Although, segging into your Sacramento building, not nearly the size of market as Dallas or LA. Talk about that space and kind of what that looks like. And you also mentioned it happens to be in an opportunity zone. Tell us a little bit about that project.
Yeah, so Sacramento really reminds us a lot of Portland. A lot of the signs that we would see in Portland years ago, we're starting to see in Sacramento. They're the receiver of, it goes back and forth, you know, and I guess depends what city you're in, who's saying it, but they're one of the highest receivers of people exiting San Francisco. And a lot of talent that continues to do work or works for companies in the Bay are, as they're getting a little bit older, having family, wanting to buy a house, wanting to have just a little more space around them, but still be active in the Bay Area. Sacramento is one of the best places to be able to do that. And we were going around just kind of sniffing around the market and looking at buildings, and almost literally every building we went into that was not a single tenant building was fit exactly that description. So, you know, we saw it with our own eyes that it wasn't just a statistic that, you know, sounded good, but we saw the practical effect of a lot of tech companies and creative companies, specifically from San Francisco, working out of goofy little offices all by themselves.
Yeah.
And then you also have the state of California there, which is, you know, the fifth largest economy in the world, I'm constantly reminded. And then that there's a ton of ancillary uses that's been off of that. We're two or three blocks from the state capitol. You have a ton of lobbyist groups, a lot of legal firms, a lot of consultants, a lot of other businesses besides just tech and creative that need either short-term flexible space or need space so they can scale up and down.
But it also happens to be in an opportunity zone. Can you talk a little bit about that? I think that's still kind of new and people are trying to learn how does that work and what's that look like and how does that play out for a co-working operator?
Yeah. Opportunity zones are really interesting from the real estate side. You know, there was an act that created tax advantages for these different zones throughout the country. Each state lobbied for the geographic areas that they would be defined as. And there's really no rhyme or reason, and this is not a politically correct answer, but they're supposed to be in zones that, you know, needs real estate to help stimulate the local submarket and to bring creative uses and new uses to a new neighborhood. But it's not always exactly where they ended up.
Yep.
And there's no real rhyme or reason where they are. For instance, in Portland, the Pearl District, which does not need to be an opportunity zone, is one.
Is one. That's interesting.
You know, or most
like could have been one 7 years ago or 10 years ago, but not today.
Yep. And then there's two benefits of it. One is from the real estate side. There's certain tax advantages for owners and investors of real estate in an opportunity zone. And then on the business side, there's, you know, equal tax advantages or businesses that are located and meet the requirements of the opportunity zone. Okay. And, you know, there's always metrics for the business, but the main driver is they have their headquarters and the bulk of their workforce has to be located geographically in an opportunity zone. And so in Portland, for example, we happen to have two locations in op zones, and we have had a few members at our downtown Portland location that came to us specifically for that reason and, you know, operate out of here to meet those requirements. We found from the real estate side that it's a great benefit, but it wasn't a driver for us at all to do it. It was a good building. It laid out very well. It was a good basis on it. You know, we're involved on the ownership side and it's just an extra advantage. It was like the icing on the cake, but it wasn't a driver of or directive of pursuing a location there. And then same thing, you know, we wanted on the business side, it to just be an extra. It's a great spot. You know, we believe long-term for short-term flexible space it's a high exposure location. It's not off in the, you know, fringe area or anything. And we also are able to market it as opportunity zone compliant should any businesses need to take advantage of that.
Yep. And that space, it's, I think the article I read said 30,000 square feet. Is that roughly your target size?
Yeah, all of our locations, with the exception of one, are 20 to 30,000 feet. And we really like that size range because you get critical mass. You're able to efficiently operate it with staff without going up to the next level. And it feels like a boutique space. You know your neighbors. You get to know people. There's less turnover, you know, both with staff and then at the membership level. You start seeing these larger spaces that are 80, 100, 240,000 square feet, 360,000 feet. And you lose that village effect. You all of a sudden don't know everyone. Every floor is just a carbon copy of the next one. You start locking your door when you go out to lunch or you go to a meeting.
Don't know everyone.
You don't talk to it. It's like living in the big city. You just, you know, go about your day and keep to yourself. And that 20 to 30,000 feet is just a great sweet spot for being able to aggregate. You know, we usually have about 250 to 300 members, maybe upwards of 350 members at max in locations of that size. And it just feels good and allows us to operate it efficiently, you know, versus a 5,000, 10,000 square foot space.
Absolutely. One more question about kind of your structures. Will you ever sign a traditional lease or will you always do something creative, have ownership or some sort of arrangement with a landlord?
Never say never, but we'll probably never do a traditional deal again. We did it on our first few locations because it was the norm and what we needed to do to get started. We've got great relationships, you know, with all those landlords. But really where we see this going, you know, as it becomes more competitive, as it becomes more liquid with operating within a larger building, we feel, you know, variety of reasons, not just financial, that being in some type of joint venture with the building ownership is the best long-term for everyone. It fully aligns both parties to be looking out for each other's interests and not just their own. It allows the space to be an amenity to other tenants that aren't members and really leveraging the space at best so that you don't need, in a co-working space, you need a good collaborative area and a good lounge, meeting spaces and kitchen areas for people to get to know each other and to hang out and then just have the basic resources of an office. And there's a lot of overlap with these larger scale buildings where, you know, they need all those things to check the boxes for the leasing requirements for the tenants. But they also, as more and more landlords are building them, they want people to actually use them.
Right.
And to provide value beyond the tour, the initial tour of the space. You know, I can't tell you how many times I go into some of these big office towers and they've got this beautiful lounge and this beautiful deck and
not a soul to be found.
No one there.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And so co-working really gives it a heartbeat. So similar thing in Dallas, they had an amenity space, they had a terrace, they had like, you know, common building kitchen, they had a kegerator, and it was barely ever used. And mainly not because it wasn't nice, but just you go down there and, oh, there's no one here. Let's get out of here.
The chicken or egg problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People want to be around people. And so we've got good people and then other people want to be around to that and it all feeds off of each other.
Yeah, I think that's one of the more exciting developments of in our industry is just that synergy that can truly make a difference in a building and make a difference for not just the members of the space directly, but the sort of ecosystem of the building, which is fun.
The only crazy thing is it's taken us this long to figure it out, you know, just working in commercial real estate forever. You know, you see this in a lot of other sectors and it's just taken so long for office to get there. So it's great to see it finally
happen. Yeah. I was surprised Industrious was mentioning at the conference some of the things they're doing in LA, like cooking classes for the rooftop deck and just, to, you know, to give people a reason to use it. And even talking about the gym space, they were like, look, most people have a gym membership. And so they're looking to do something in the building that's either, you know, just way more convenient or interesting. So I think you mentioned like the Peloton, like races and, you know, some competitions and just kind of trying to go at it in a unique way. So I imagine it takes some experimentation to figure out what does work and what works for a specific location. Dallas is probably a lot different than LA in terms of what people want out of their building space.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what Industrious is doing great and, you know, co-working does with all their members and, you know, we're starting to do as we get into these larger projects is just that human interface of, you know, when we onboard members, it's, you know, hopefully done in person or they get, you know, a great guidebook of just how to utilize the space. What are the components? What are the amenities? How do I use it? How do I book the meeting rooms? How do I attend events? And a fair amount of education. And in these larger projects, tenant moves in, they just throw the keys at them and say, good luck, you know, here's a map.
So I love to ask this question. You guys have been scaling fairly rapidly over the past several years. What's one of the biggest lessons that you've learned that you'd be willing to share?
That's a good question. I've got a few of them. I think the big thing, you know, that we've learned is really sticking to the basics and not trying to make things too complicated. At the end of the day, this is super simple. And understanding the market is very important, but also understanding your program, you know, is equally, if not more important, and really sticking to your guns and your instinct of how to run a great location. And, you know, we try to, you know, now whenever we look at a new spot is go through the basics. If this was my office, what would it be like every day? And just would I want to work here? So, you know, it's hard understanding what everyone wants, but we really just break it back down to what would we want if we were the user? How would this be the best experience for us? And sticking to that.
Is there something you would say you've evolved over the years that you're kind of like, you sit back and think we're really proud of where we're at on something?
I'm really proud of our ability to create an authentic space that doesn't feel like an office.
Yeah.
And I get these people who just give me crazy looks whenever I say that in a meeting, you know, whether it's our, you know, architects or our partners.
Like, what do you mean it doesn't feel like an office? Isn't that like a building?
Yeah. Like it's central office.
Mm-hmm.
But no, we do it at pretty much every single juncture when we're making decisions of, oh, here's, you know, picking light fixtures. Well, this is what, you know, this is standard in an office. And like, we don't want office fixtures. We don't want office door handles. We don't want office carpeting. We don't want office furniture. We want furniture. We want all of those things that will hold up in an office, but we want it to feel like a home or a restaurant or a hotel or all of these great third
places. The hospitality aspect. Yep.
But we don't want to go too far. We don't want it to be, you know, kitschy or to be not authentic and really contrived. So, you know, I had this great quote from our original branding guy, Steve, and, you know, he worked for this great retail company for a long time and they'd build out their stores and try to do, the, you know, similar things, you know, different for obviously, but similar. And he said, you know, he'd hammer all these concepts into his whole staff. And he had one guy come to him one day. He's like, Steve, I've never worked so hard to make it look like I'm not trying.
Right.
Because, you know, there's a little slacker your vibe that comes out every now and then and stuff that we do. And it's not from not trying or just not throwing it together. It's the opposite. Like we're trying so hard to make it look easy. And that's, I think, what I'm most proud of our ability to do is we've, you know, created these really amazing spaces where people just want to be. And I think it's becoming harder and harder to do that. But, you know, as more and more people are getting into it. But at the same time, I think as users are becoming more sophisticated, at least in the markets we're in, they're quickly able to tell the difference of who's trying maybe too hard in some areas or just trying to throw, you know, a bunch of catalogs of cool spaces, all, you know, all at the designers all at once.
Yeah, I think what you've done is not that easy. And I think that's one of the aspects that new operators really struggle with is when you're working with your team of professionals that are used to doing it differently, right? And so you've had to really take a stand and own and quarterback like what you're looking for and drive that. And so I'm sure you've had moments where, you know, you're being questioned and you're trying to stand firm on what you think is right when you have, you know, design professionals or architects maybe questioning, you know, what you're trying to go after, or just finding the team of people that really get what you're trying to do. Maybe they don't question you because you found the right people, but I think that's not easy to do.
Yeah, I think that's going back to your earlier question. That's what we've learned is, yeah, you're constantly getting questioned. You're second guessing yourself. And it just boils down to, you know, the basics of the first location is like, well, do we like it? Would this be our office? And now we also, you know, have the luxuries. We have enough data points to be able to just shut that down. So
yeah, you're getting into the fun stage to your point where you're really iterating and learning. So just to wrap up, what do the next few years look like for the business?
We've always been one step at a time. And so we try not to get too far ahead, because a lot of this is we're watching the landscape of our industry, you know, really unfolding and finding our lane. But immediately, you know, we're probably looking at adding in Los Angeles and Dallas. And maybe, you know, we have another location opening up in the Portland area this spring. We got Sacramento opening, so we'll be able to start to understand that market a little bit better and identify additional opportunities there and really just work on operating more efficiently and trying to find larger and larger platforms in these larger office buildings to operate in.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing your story and sharing your time. Obviously, you're on the road a lot and away from your family and have a lot on the to-do list every day. So appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me. You've seen Portland, but if you're in LA or Dallas or soon to be Sacramento, please stop by or send your friends by and check out the space.
Yeah, absolutely. Will do. Sacramento's, you're making me think a lot about Sacramento. You know what I always think about Sacramento is really hot there, because we live in like the Mecca of temperature zone just south of San Francisco. But Sacramento is such an interesting spot, right on the way to Tahoe. And to your point, I mean, not even just, you talked about kind of, you know, maybe older generations kind of making that shift, but all the data in San Francisco says, you know, the millennials kind of have had enough of not being able to afford to buy a place and crowds. And so I bet that shift makes a ton of sense.
We see it in Portland with, you know, Portland has been recognized for a long time as a big little city and very urban. And, you know, up until recently, everyone could do that. But now, I mean, I totally believe it, that millennials are now buying into the fact that the suburbs can be cool. The restaurants are opening in the suburbs and, you know, outlying area, outer markets. And now you can have a great life and have access to all the big city
amenities. Experiences. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even Dallas, I was in Dallas maybe last June, and I'm trying to remember what it's called. There's a WeWork there and kind of near one of the Common Desks. The amount of like entertainment options in not downtown Dallas, like suburban, like near Plano. I can't remember. I'm not familiar enough to remember exactly what it was called.
Yeah. But
I was like, this is so cool. Like our suburbs here and I'm on the peninsula south of San Francisco are just really generic. You know, you go to the city to do anything interesting. And there I was like, wow, this is super compelling. You can live, you can work, you can play, and it's easy and fun and just lots of options. So anyway, thanks again for your time. Really appreciate it and look forward to seeing how things evolve for you.
Hey, thanks so much, Jamie.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.